If you're the kind of music fan who reads the credits on CDs, you'll have seen the title Mastering Engineer on just about every record in your collection. NPR's Rick Carr set out to find out exactly what a mastering engineer does. He learned that whether you read the small print or not, you do care about the artistry of a mastering engineer.
Mastering engineers actually date back to the days of 78s and vinyl records. The record you bought in the store was pressed from a mold, which was itself cast from a kind of original record, the master. The mastering engineer's job was to take the music that the artist and producer made in the studio and literally engrave or cut that sound into lacquer or plastic or wax. Greg Calbee is a mastering engineer at New York's Sterling Sound. Back in the days of vinyl records, he says, his job was to overcome the problems inherent in the process of engraving sound into plastic.
The needle scraping along the bottom of the groove makes a noise. The lower your signal was in the groove, the louder the noise would be. So if it was not good, you'd have a record that sounded noisy, and you'd hear less of the music. How to overcome that, make the music as loud as possible. How to make the music as loud as possible? You had to kind of work your way through the grooves of the record and kind of sculpt out on the vinyl.
In other words, the sound waves in the vinyl had to gracefully swing from the top of the groove to the bottom, not jump jaggedly. Engineers used machines called disc lathes. Think of your old turntable, except much larger and heavier and more expensive. Instead of a needle that skimmed along the groove and picked up vibrations, there was a cutter head which pumped up and down in time with the vibrations of the music and engraved them into the lacquer. Calbee says there were certain sounds that completely flummoxed that technology. Take some of Bob Dylan's early work, for example.
He has the penchant for leaning in and doing an incredibly loud harmonica solo in the middle of a song, you know, and hitting a screechy, screechy high note. Now, those screechy highs, they cause a lot of heat in the cutter head, which would translate to sometimes to blowing the cutter head out. Without getting too technical, what really you needed to do for the vinyl was make sure that that thing would transfer, and so subsequently you would have to take some of the highs off the harmonica.
Deeper sounds could make the needle skip, a too loud bass drum or bass guitar, for instance. Inevitably, Calbee says, vinyl records were compromises between, say, what Bob Dylan recorded in the studio and what the technology could actually reproduce. Record producers and musicians also took mastering as their last chance to make little tweaks to the sound. Mike Creor is an audio engineer at Dubway Studios in New York.
I've always felt that if you give what you've created to someone else, they have a fresh set of ears and they're in a different listening environment, they're going to pick up on some things that you didn't pick up on in the mix. Even if you have five or six of you sitting in the room, somebody's not going to pick up on what's going to happen in that mastering stage.
Mastering engineers are no longer cutting wax, but even CDs have technological limitations. So mastering engineers are still part of the process. Today they use computers and piles of expensive equipment, some that smooths out volume and some that behaves like an elaborate version of the bass and treble knobs on your stereo. Creor says good mastering just makes everything sound better.
All the things that are at a quieter level sound louder, and the things that are at a louder level kind of smooth out quite a bit. You notice that the voice comes up front. Anything that's in the center channel, the kick drum comes up front and the bass comes up front. The guitars sound like all of a sudden they're, instead of playing through a 10-inch speaker, they're playing through a 15-inch speaker.
Louder is better, but only up to a point, according to Greg Calbee at Sterling Sound. Making the music on a CD louder obliterates subtlety. Calbee says an awful lot of recent releases suffer from being too loud. They lack detail. Nonetheless, Calbee says people in the record industry are terrified that their records won't sound as good as the competition if they don't sound as loud. But he says that's nonsense.
What's the problem? Can't you, in your car, can't you just turn it up? I mean, did anybody in your audience ever go buy a CD and say, I really loved it, but I couldn't play it, it was too low? I've never heard that. I've never heard anybody who likes music care about any of this stuff. And yet, decisions are constantly being made to cheat the real music lover out of really the enhanced experience of what a CD can be.
Calbee says a lot of times he doesn't have a choice. If the musicians, producers, and record label execs want a loud record that lacks subtlety, then that's what he has to give them. But he says he's noticing a backlash against louder is better, mostly among older artists. Which brings us back to Bob Dylan. Calbi spent most of his time this year working on new releases, but he spent about 3 months remastering Dylan's entire catalog. That meant diving back into archives of tapes and yellowing boxes, searching for the best-sounding versions of 40-year-old records.
You know, in the 60s, a lot of these things weren't considered masterpieces. They were just considered product, and a lot of the times the tapes were even thrown away or put in a location which was not properly notated.
In one case, the sound had literally rubbed off of one of Dylan's original tapes. Calbi had to replace that chunk with the sound from a CD and make sure it matched the rest. In other cases, he messed with the sound that people had been listening to for years. On Dylan's early records, for instance, occasionally the guitar, harmonica, and voice are spread across both stereo speakers.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In a jingle jangle morning, I come following you.
A lot of this became kind of a philosophical discussion about which was the document that Bob wanted to present. Was it the vinyl or was it the tape? And my feeling about this was that the performance was the document.
And so in order to be truer to the performance, Calbi says, he pulled everything to the center. By the way, Calbi says, that harmonica wasn't nearly as big an issue on CD as it was on vinyl. He says on the records Dylan made during the early days of CDs, the singer's voice isn't as clear as it should be.
Oh, it's rush hour now, on the wheel and the plow, and the sun is a-going down upon the sacred cow.
Calbi says he used his equipment to perk the sound up, to warm up bass guitars, make drums and electric guitars punchier, and reveal details in Dylan's voice.
Ring them bells, sweet mother, for the poor man's son. Ring them bells so the world will know that God is one. Oh, the shepherd is asleep where the willows weep, and the mountains are filled with lost sheep. Ring them bells.
You still hear all the graveliness of the top of the voice, but when now all of a sudden when you hear the bottom breath of the voice, it takes that graveliness and it takes away the irritating element and it just becomes incredibly emotional.
Of course, most people don't listen to music on stereos like the one in Greg Calbi's studio. Its speakers alone cost more than $10,000 apiece. Calbi says that doesn't matter, though. Mastering is about bringing out the subtleties in a recording. He hopes that the differences are clear, even on a humble home stereo or an MP3 player. Rick Carr, NPR News, New York.